Lewis is born in New Orleans in 1901, August 4th, 1901. He's dirt poor. He's essentially a street urchin. He goes to school up to the fifth grade, at some point in the fifth grade, leaves. But he is captivated by music. He sings in a male quartet with three other boys, all friends. He was known as having a beautiful high tenor, and you can still hear that on some of his recordings in the 30s, you know, before he really developed that very gravelly voice. Lucille is raised in a house in this neighborhood. So, to take that from their relative disparate backgrounds, she middle class Catholic, he extremely poor African American in a southern city beset by racial violence. In fact, the year before he was born, there had been a major white riot against blacks who were defending themselves. Lewis and Lucille meet in 1939. He's world famous. He's been married three times before. He is universally accepted as the greatest trumpet player in the world, certainly within the jazz idiom. Although I'll point out that classical players, both then to the present, worship Louis Armstrong, classical trumpet players. And they meet at the Cotton Club. And the Cotton Club in those days in New York was the biggest jazz venue there was. It had seating for over 600 patrons. But like most of those places, it was controlled by gangsters. And it was segregated. So they meet there as performers in 39. Lucille's a dancer. She's a member of the chorus line. Lewis, of course, has a 17-piece orchestra. And this is, you know, this is the kind of place where white people from out of town, and certainly, you know, Upper East Side people with money, and that kind of thing, would go to see them at Roseland, not Roseland, at the Cotton Club. And whites traveling in Harlem, listening to music, you know, was a, I guess the vulgar term for it would have been called slumming. People going to be entertained. Maybe also men would go to some of the cat houses and things like that. In 1942, they get married. And Lucille wants, she knows that she's marrying someone who's very famous, but who's on the road about 300 days a year. So she has this notion, I'll buy a starter house. And we'll live there for a time before we move to a suburban mansion or a penthouse in Manhattan or that kind of thing. And so they get married on the road in St. Louis, Missouri. But then she comes home. She comes back to the East Coast. He's still performing. And she buys this house with her own money. It was $8,000. She puts down $3,000. And takes a mortgage out for $5,000. She had grown up near here in a small black enclave. Otherwise, the neighborhood was overwhelmingly white and was made up of Irish, German, and Italian immigrants. She bought the house from a family of Irish immigrants who had 10 kids. So you could well imagine this house was pretty beaten up. So Lucille purchases the house, he comes home, she sends him a Western Union telegram and says, when you return, don't go to this hotel or that, you know, come to this address. He approaches one morning, this is his story, so I don't think it's apocryphal, but he approaches one morning driven in a cab. It's about 6:30 in the morning. And the driver says, "Mr. Armstrong, this is the address, this is your home." And Lou is standing across the street with his arms akimbo, is admiring the house and can't believe it's him. You know, he's such a modest guy that it's like, wow, me, you know? And he absolutely put his foot down and refused to move. He would not move. She, you know, pressured him to look at other, you know, beautiful apartments, to consider a brownstone in Harlem, you know, really elegant kinds of housing. But he didn't want to leave from here. And the reason he gave was, you know, the people here are working class. They remind me of the people I grew up with. And they don't put on airs. They don't act elitist, which were traits that he associated with wealthy people, both black and white. And so Lucille had to deal with the disappointment. I'm married to this guy. He won't move to a goddamn house in Westchester County, you know. So she starts adding elegance to the house. She works with a, and I think she began doing this in the 40s, if not, or the early 50s. She works with a professional interior decorator. And so he would return, you know, perhaps from several months on the road, if she, you know, was not with him, and he'd see a new bathroom, or he'd see, you know, new things on the wall, that kind of thing. So, long story, answer to your question, that's why they moved here. And that's why they never left. And in fact, even after he died, she stayed in the house. I mean, at that point, she could have moved to anything she wanted. So here's...
And Lucille fixed something I never had in my life before. She gave me a room and made a den out of it. You know what I mean? That really knocked me out, because we couldn't afford no den. And remember the other day, we better sleep in that room. Now I got a den. I'm looking at all my tapes around the walls and just pick out what I want to hear. Well, it's got to feel good. I mean, I don't ask much in life. I mean, those are the needed things. She know that would be my life in music. So when I can hear every record I ever made, all I got to do is look in a little book and put my finger on it. My interviews, I got them all on tape, and I buy records. That's why I tell you. I buy everybody's records. I got the Beatles. I got everybody. And they said, what you think about the Beatles? I say, they're great. They got a little beat there. You know what I mean? And it's all right.
And,
okay, that's all right.
And only get a haircut.
You see, now we got to be not too partial to one kind of music. You got to appreciate all kind of music. That's what I'm trying to put in your head. Listen to all kind of music.
You know, he loved Western classical music. He loved lyrical opera. He did listen to popular music, and he listened to music that we would probably define as like classical, you know, kind of popular in the 50s and 60s, some of it like elevator music. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because I don't know if these things are still around, but you know, he did listen to some modern jazz players. You're familiar with the name Miles Davis,
yes.
Clifford Brown. If you like jazz, worth checking out. Clifford Brown, tremendous player. So on this next clip, you're going to hear Lewis improvising to a song sung by a friend of his from Naples, Italy. Thank you.
just recording it while, just catching. We leave tomorrow night, 11:50, for Miami, Florida, for 2 weeks. By plane. This will be my last night home, and I'm spending it talking to you.
One of the things he enjoyed doing also was he might play a recording of something he did in, say, the early 30s, and then he would improvise to it. He'd play it and play along. You know the song, What a Wonderful World. So in this clip, Lewis talks about the song and relates it to living in this community.
So, Wonderful World. There's a zillion people dug that tune the way I did it when I felt it. Because there's so much in Wonderful World that brings me back to my neighborhood where I live in Corona, New York. Of course, Long Island, everybody knows where that is. And Lucille and I, ever since we married, we've been right there in that block. Everybody keeps their little homes up like we do. And it's just like one big family. I saw three generations come up in that block. Mm-hmm. And they're all with their children, grandchildren. They come back to see Uncle Sesmo and Aunt Lucille. That's why I can say, I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I look at all them kids' faces. And I got pictures of them when they was 5, 6, 7 years old. It is a wonderful world.
Except, of course, when it's not. So I want to share with you a story that takes place in 1957. Lewis is asked by the U.S. State Department to take a tour of the Soviet Union. And, you know, the U.S. and the Soviet Union were locked in a very intense Cold War. Lewis would be the first American artist of any stripe to tour the Soviet Union, although there had been American artists like Paul Robeson who had gone there, but not with U.S. permission. So Lewis is flattered to be asked, and he accepts the invitation. But something else is occurring in the country that same year. The civil rights movement is heating up. In fact, 2 years earlier, Emmett Till had been murdered, 13-year-old boy who had been killed from Chicago, visiting his grandmother in Mississippi, and he had been murdered. And there's a major desegregation struggle going on in Little Rock, Arkansas. Specifically, 10 black families decide to send their children to Central High School. It's the Bronx Science of Little Rock. And when they show up early that fall, they find that the school is surrounded by soldiers with drawn bayonets, and that there's a very ugly, racist white mob in front. Lewis is following the story, as is all of Black America, and by many of the rest of us as well. And middle of the month, the crisis still unresolved. He's already written to President Eisenhower, you know, please step in and help these girls, help these kids. And in the middle of the month, he gives a concert at the University of North Dakota. It so happens when the concert's over, a reporter comes to his hotel room disguised as the porter bringing up the food, and asks Lewis questions about his performance, but also, do you have any thoughts about what's happening in Little Rock, Arkansas? And Lewis goes apeshit. And he starts to sing our national anthem and inserts the word motherfucker into every line. He doesn't complete the song, but he then proceeds to say on the record, as far as I'm concerned, the government can go to hell the way it's treating my people down south. Things have gotten so bad in this country, it's as though colored people, his term, don't have a country. The president's a two-faced coward. The governor is a motherfucking plowboy. And I will not go to Russia. So in the space of 3 weeks, this comes full circle. He's invited, he's pleased to be invited, and then he opts out based on what's happening down south. I think on September 23rd or 4th, finally, the president sends in federal troops and the children are escorted in. At that point, they were 9 because one of the children opted not to go to the high school. So if you look this up in Wikipedia or wherever, it's going to be referred to as the Little Rock 9. Lewis, like all artists, was not outspoken, you know, about current events, about civil rights or other issues. But he was moved by the way these kids were being treated to speak without any filter to this reporter. And he never wavered. His management tried to tone it down, but they were unsuccessful. If he was asked by someone after the fact, do you retract any of your sentiments, he'd say, hell no. So here's the last clip on the tour. And this is essentially Lewis laying out his philosophy of life.
That's my story, folks. I guess I'm stuck with it. I usually say nice things also about human beings, if they deserve it. I never want to be any more than I am. And what I don't have, I don't need it in him. I've always loved and I always lived a normal life, which I appreciate very much. And I've always loved everybody, still do.
I'll entertain any questions you have, but let me ask you, what is, if you had to choose, a handful of words to describe him, or how would you describe him as a person,
Definitely. I think he's humble, wise, mm-hmm. compassionate, mm-hmm. definitely all of those things. And I think he firmly supports humanism and just in general, the treatment of other people. And we've seen with all these clips, recordings. I think that he didn't let the fame or the money change his values. And that's pretty unique.
I think you're 100% on it there. He was just we sometimes refer to people who enjoy giving more than receiving. I mean, he loved adulation. He loved the fact that world famous, little Louie from New Orleans, but he didn't lord it over anyone. I don't have the pictures with me now, but in the 1930s, during the Depression, he was known to have had huge amounts of coal delivered to a theater so that poor people could go there and take as much coal as they needed to heat their flats. He gave people money without any expectation of it being given back. He was ebullient, he was outgoing, generous, as you say, empathetic. And I think he would have been a really, really good friend to have. The other thing about him is, and you may find this if you do any readings, that there was a period in the 50s and 60s where some other musicians referred to him as an Uncle Tom, were critical of him because he appeared to be obsequious on stage. Now, the person on stage was the person behind the stage, off stage. So he really was, you know, this broad-grinned person, quick to laugh and all of that. There were times he turned it up a notch, and I'm sure it made Black people in the audience flinch, or, you know, Black people sitting at home watching on television. But the joy that he had in giving a performance with some of the, quote, minstrel mannerisms that younger players, young Black players, would have taken offense at, was really who he was at home or in the recording studio. We have a clip of him recording, and as he's at the microphone, it's the same mannerisms, you know. So he was a unique guy. His influence is all over the map. We think, I mean, it's the judgment of the museum and this historian that Hyland referred to downstairs, that he's not just the father of jazz, although there's a continuum, you know, there were people before him as well. But he's kind of the father of popular music, because nothing that was performed before him sounds the same after him. So, you know, if you took a song like Mary Had a Little Lamb and you sung it, you know, nicely, but based exactly on the notes, he comes along and he switches up the rhythm. He makes it completely his own. He adds syncopation, a blues element, you know. You know, he's just tremendous. And it's why he, you know, we get 14,000 visitors a year here from people from all over the world. And it's because of his greatness. And a lot of the people are not jazz fans per se, but they're Lewis fans, which is interesting. That's the tour.
Thank you so much.